This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3229 for Thursday the 17th of December 2020. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E19, Redesigned is part of the series, Linux In-Laws. It is hosted by Monochrome, and is about 74 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, our two chaps interview Itamar Haber of Rediz fame.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 19. Redis. Martin, hi, how are things?
Hey, good morning, Chris. Things are fine, things are well, and our favorite project is being discussed today, or one of our favorite projects.
Absolutely. It's a great pleasure to have Itamar Haber on the show. Full disclosure, we recorded this interview late October when Israel, where Itamar is living with his family, it was still in lockdown or under lockdown mode. So the sound quality may be a little bit off here and there. We do like to apologize for this, but overall, I think it's a great experience. And we are rolling with the interview now, and see you on the other side. This is our featured speaker for tonight, a gentleman called by the name of Itamar Haber. But enough from me. Itamar, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Christoph, and thank you, Martin, for inviting me to this wonderful, lovely podcast. I'll stop talking like you now and return and resume my normal voice. My name is Itamar Haber. I'm a software developer in origin, I guess I can call myself that. But it's been a long time since I seriously developed software. One would argue whether I even actually did that in the past. Currently, let's start like chronologically and go backwards if it's of an interest. Feel free to stop me, right? Currently, because look, I'm almost 49. Well, 48 now, so I've got a lot of stories. Right now, I'm working in a very interesting company called Redis Labs. By the way, I know both of you from there, so hi again. But I've been with Redis Labs for a long time now because I'm so old, almost 8 years. Redis, for those of you who don't know it, is an open source project, which is something I think we're here to talk about. So I won't talk about it just now. I'll continue with my introduction about myself. in Redis Labs or at Redis Labs, I've done a lot of things. I was like the 10th employee or something in the company. I had a lot of hats, but I've always been passionate about developers and interacting with developers and basically making an open source project really open source, not just in the sense of the source, but in the sense of openness. Before that, I dabbled a lot with other databases, mainly SQL-ish ones. Redis is my first real foray into NoSQL land, but I've done the regular batch of Oracle, MySQL, MSSQL, and even Informix at one time. I have diplomas for all of these, like real certificates somewhere on real paper. Before doing a lot of DBA work and database-related development, I was basically an app programmer, and I started that like when I was around 16, pretty young. I was working at my mother's and father's software development house. And even before that, I used to try and hack or be a hacker or programmer or developer or something. Was always fascinated by the blinking lights and the zeros and ones. And I actually have an anecdote, if there's time for that.
Absolutely.
I can actually tell you, I remember why I became a programmer or a developer, what was the main driver. So one of the first machines I ever touched was something called a K-Pro. I don't know if either of you or the audience have heard of that machine, but it was, amazingly, it was a portable computer. It was a computer you could move from one place to another. It was amazing. If you can embed like images in a podcast, can you put image in a podcast?
Not really.
That's a great idea.
We can put links into the show notes, yes.
Yeah, well, maybe we need a link to an image of K-Pro, but it was basically this huge suitcase made out of steel filled with expensive electronics. You had to be like very muscular to move it around, but it was portable. It has this tiny CRT screen in it. It had its own keyboard, a floppy drive, and it had an amazing operating system called CPM. That's CP/M. If you don't know what I mean.
I know it quite well, actually.
Yeah. And it came with a game. So you could also list the files in a directory or something. But there was a single game. It was called Letters. It was some kind of a King Kong clone, all done in ASCII, of course, no graphics. And after playing that game, I was fascinated by it, and I decided to reverse engineer it. So I went to the command prompt, and the file name was letters.com. So I tried doing type, I think, was the command to see what's inside it. Type letters.com. My screen, the tiny screen, immediately filled with garbage plus beeping sounds, which I later learned are control G's. And I spent hours looking at that, trying to understand how from this pile of mess the computer makes a game. I could not read binary for some reason. So I took a more cautionary approach and learned BASIC and then Pascal and Assembler and the entire goodness. Okay. I still make a decent game, though. I still don't understand how letters work. Or anything in computers, but
fair enough.
Besides the point. So you've invited me here to talk about open source?
Well, this is an open source podcast, yeah, but we can talk about communism, we can talk about political views, we can talk about free and open source software, anything really, of course.
Redis as well.
Redis comes to mind as one of the more popular open source projects that Redis Labs does, yes.
So we want to talk Redis open source, I guess.
Yes.
Sure. Maybe I work well with questions, if you can point me, but I guess the first question is tell us a little about Redis.
Exactly. For those few people who do not know Redis among our listeners, maybe why don't you give a short overview about this popular in-memory NoSQL database?
Great. So you said all the keywords, NoSQL in-memory database, or maybe a data structure store. Let's break it down. It's a project. It's an open source project. It was instigated, created, and lovingly maintained by an amazing fellow called Salvatore Sanfilippo, an Italian guy, simply brilliant, more of an artist than a developer, which makes him a great developer, I guess. Basically was like shutting down one startup with that he opened with a friend. That's like early 2009, I think. And after having developed some sort of an application, found a gap in existing technologies, and we're talking about basically the inception or the beginning of NoSQL or whatevs. So the idea was, yeah, I have this relational database, let's go with MySQL, and I love it, I do a lot of things with it, but it's not really the best tool for some of the tasks that I have and I'm currently using it with, whether it's too big or too small or too complex or too slow, whatever, there are limitations and constraints, excuse my pun. So like any good artist, instead of letting it slide, he decided to create something of his own, something that already existed in some form. If you're familiar with Memcached, Redis is kind of a spiritual successor of Memcached in a lot of senses, but ironically, it wasn't inspired by Memcached. I'm not sure that Salvatore, the creator, was also referred to by his nickname Anti-Res, or Anti-Res, or Anti-Rets, as he calls himself, was even aware of Memcached. So he just went ahead and developed something that would help him as a developer, or he thought would be helpful for other developers, and just open sourced it. And this sounds very fast, but, and it was actually quite fast. He wrote the first prototype like for Redis in very small time. It's actually available somewhere in the archives. It's a TCL-based version of Redis, 300 lines long, but it's basic Redis in TCL. And after this proof of concept, he went ahead and basically began what is a very interesting career choice. He began being an open source developer. That is, he set his ass down, excuse my French, and without being paid for it. He wasn't employed at the time. His company was closed. He wasn't sponsored or anything. Just sat down and started coding in C of all languages, because C is the programming language of system software, and Redis as a database server is considered system software. So he basically started coding Redis in C, and after, I think, 7 months or so, or 6 months, there was the first version of Redis. So late 2009, if I'm not mistaken. And at that time, Redis wasn't known. It wasn't even popular. Salvatore had some credibility as a developer from his other and previous experiences. So he had some followers and stuff like that, but it was still unused. And somehow, during I think the first coming 2 years, the popularity of Redis just shot up. The popularity and also the capabilities. A lot of that, in my opinion, was due to the fact that Redis was an open source project with a leader, a maintainer, a creator, a dictator, if you will, a very opinionated one, for sure. but a very benevolent one also, because he understood, and still does, I guess, we're talking in past sense, but Salvatore was a developer and is a developer, so he understands what is the user experience one needs from a tool like Redis. But on the other hand, he also knew how to talk to other developers, which is not of less important. So he got feedback from people. He talked with people. He exchanged ideas, whether via the project used to be hosted. Right now it's on GitHub, but it used to be hosted on Google Code. There was this product by Google, which was shut down like so many others. The development was transparent in the sense that he did the development, but did consult with people and did take their feedbacks. And Redis grew sort of organically by the people who used it. And I think this type of interaction is what I find perhaps the top reason to do open source development, the fact that not just the many eyes concept that people can go and, I don't know, read your code or do code reviews and blame you on the bugs that you do, but it's more open and more, I feel, private and intimate to develop products like that. Of course, sure, you can build a product, a great product, with product managers and surveys and feedbacks and marketing. That's like a top-down approach. But for some stuff, I don't know exactly what perhaps, but some stuff benefits from this kind of guerrilla-like, we're huddling around a repo, we're discussing this together, likely-minded people working on the core thing, and then it's becoming sort of a rolling snowball. It just grows and more people join. And then the challenge is, of course, how do you maintain and grow and nourish an ever-growing community of users, not necessarily of developers, which is another hassle, I guess, or another challenge. Where was I? What was I talking about? Ah, Redis, sure. So Salvatore was kind of the living spirit, and it still is, I guess, in many people's eyes, the living spirit for Redis. He got sponsored eventually. His effort did not go unnoticed, so he was sponsored. Someone picked up the tab, so at some point Redis did start becoming his profession. He didn't just do it pro bono, but I assure you that he didn't do it for the money. He did it because he believed in it, and sponsorship was just like a symptom or a byproduct. His first sponsor, incidentally, was a nice company called, VMware, now a part of EMC, or maybe Dell, or I don't know what. But at that time, EMC started sponsoring a lot of open source projects, and Redis was one of them. Later on, VMware. Purchased Pivotal Labs and basically rolled all the open source sponsorships to it. So Pivotal Labs also inherited Salvatore and Redis, and they tried to grow with him and see if they can help him. And at another, like this was, I guess, I don't remember the dates. Maybe we need to include the timeline, but I think around 2015 to Redis Labs. I know it's the company I work at. I'm proud of it, but seriously, it was the only logical move. Redis Labs has grown, and I'm not going to discuss the history of the company, but it's grown and proved itself to be the Redis expert company. We were working on Redis and with Redis all the time. And Salvatore recognized this and joined forces with us. And basically from 2015, Salvatore is working at Redis Labs, and we're working together on making Redis. And I would dare say in the most effective ways since the beginning, because at the beginning it was a lot of hacking, it was a lot of innovation, but as the product matures and as the features got added and implemented, right now it's more about maturity and robustness and making completions and fine-tuning optimizations and still making sure that it's the fastest database out there.
Yeah, so it's a great introduction to Redis, Itamar. I was at EMC back in the day when I think Salvatore joined, and we were all wondering, it's kind of, yeah, what was, well, actually, well, he was VMware sponsored him, right? And I was on the EMC arm, but obviously, they both joined, and And we were all wondering, it's kind of, what are we going to do with this Redis? So another question on your great introduction is really, how did you become involved with Redis itself, right? Was that purely a career choice or a love for what you saw Salvatore doing? Because I think in your introduction you mentioned you have a very much a SQL-like background, and obviously Redis is a NoSQL database. So was that a conscious choice or a career move? How would you describe that scenario?
So I've always wanted to be a mermaid.
Not a unicorn.
Well, now I'm a unicorn, yeah. I wanted to be, I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
A physician, not just like a doctor, doctor, but an actual physician. Maybe never mind my fetishes. Anyway, some sort of like people caretaker in the medical sense, greatly inspired by my grandfather, who was a pediatrician. That said, I never amounted to anything, so I wasn't accepted to any medical school. And I picked computing as like a side career, just because I was good at it and it was sort of a hobby, right? And here I find myself doing that, still doing that as a career. Redis itself was, it was life for me, just rolling between, I was between jobs when I met Iftah, the founder of Redis. Or actually, I met him in my previous role in my previous company, from which I actually knew a little about Redis. I'll explain. The previous company I used to work for was called Zround. That's with an X, so XE and the word round. I also spent a considerable time there, and what we did there was basically trying to build a company. The core technology that the company developed was, I'm going to unveil a very new concept, was an in-memory NoSQL, although we didn't call it NoSQL because the word did not exist. So an in-memory NoSQL database. It wasn't open source. It was distributed, had cluster. It wasn't Redis, but the core premise was very Redis-like, and there was no Redis for us to copy. When we started at around 2 or 3, or I don't remember when. So actually from my previous company, I knew a little about Redis. We were actually considering whether we want to ditch our core technology and start adopting something that's more standard. And I met with Iftah here in the local Israeli pond, I remember it was some kind of conference. We exchanged contact details. Later on, Zeround started like pivoting again. Without going into the details, I left them and joined Iftah and Ofer with at Redis Labs. At that time, they were called Carantia Data. Being one of the first employees and the only employees that were there besides the two founders were almost exclusively developers, very technical, besides the one QA guy alone. I had a lot of gaps to fill there. I felt like there are a lot of gaps or a lot of challenges that I can step up to. My formal role, I had like four formal roles. I'm doing customer support, doing the blog and website, doing like a bucket of roles. But what drew me, given my passions and past experiences, even in open sourcing, which I dabbed before, specifically in Slackware Linux, my passion drew me to actually dig in deeper and see what's happening. It helped me with my formal, helped me with my official and formal responsibilities, in the sense that getting to know the project was beneficial to the company and myself, even supporting customers, of course. But I also really enjoyed making sense, not only of the technology, the best way to learn whether, like, if a user asks me whether I'm sitting as a support engineer or talking about Redis, and someone asks me a question about Redis to which I don't have an answer, the best way is for me is to actually go and read the code, and this is what I did. Now, reading the code, because the code is available and because the code is open source, leads you to the next logical step, which is to submit a pull request because you found a typo in one of the comments. That's basically the first thing you do as you step into the community. You make a PR because you found a typo, which is, by the way, very nagging to maintainers, I guess. But you don't know that at that point. After, like, seeing that the code is actually out there and that I can do whatever I want with it, I started looking more into the who are the people there. I learned about the creator, Salvatore, and I learned about the other community members from the different communication channels that the project offered, mainly the GitHub, the mailing list, an IRC channel, and Twitter. I think I'm not the most outgoing person, perhaps, in real life, I don't know, but online I allow myself much more, and it's easier to connect online, so I made it a point, knowing the people who I saw visiting there, getting to know them, trying to help them, or reaching out to them for help, whether for me or one of the people who approached me, and it felt very natural to become a part of the community just because there was kind of a void there, a void for, I'd call it a community, not manager, because I wouldn't find the last thing I'd call a manager, but someone or people who make the community tick along. In Redis's case, it was even more prominent, this void or lack of person, because Salvatore was very unpredictable in what he did and how he communicated with people. Some people he would engage in discussions, others, or even the same, it would just leave dry and hanging with stuff. So there was a lot of place where people wanted to get involved, to dive deeper, take responsibility and ownership, not just wait for someone to tell you to do something, just like try to be helpful, see where you can make the biggest impact. And I think I was one of them. Over the years, I established that. But all in all, it's sort of a growing experience, in the sense that there is no recipe. You just have to play it by the ear and see where your fortes are. If you can do everything, if you're a super developer and if you know everything, and if you can write good documentation or blog posts or tutorials and whatever, then you can do anything. But if you're not an Uber person, and even if you know just one good thing or know to do just one thing, maybe it's design a logo, maybe it's developing a web page or whatever, these kinds of skills are also crucial in every community. And the challenge, I think, in every open source project is attracting community members who can contribute in a substantial way, not just fix typos.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm leaving to myself. If you have questions, feel free.
But obviously, that has been more than insightful, especially about the origins of Redis and Redis Labs, for that matter. Githamar, just a quick question. Full disclosure, I do work for Redis Labs. So did Martin before I decided to defect, but that's a different story. Yeah. Anyway, shortly after I joined Redis Labs, I just for fun, basically, I did a kind of quick poll on GitHub to see how many projects do require Redis as one of their dependencies. And I was really amazed, and that was about 2018, give or take a few months. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised, basically, how popular Redis at that stage already was. Redis was then used in virus scanners, mail systems, primarily as a key value store in terms of a simple cache, not a simple cache, but just a cache. But Redis has much more to offer. I'm just thinking kind of along the lines of modules and stuff. What is your opinion on the kind of the this first use case that apparently many people still use Redis for, and the new bits and pieces, inverted commas, like modules like streams that have entered the code base over the years?
So I'll start with a little confession. When I joined Redis Labs, and my first task was actually understand Redis, not dive into the code, just know how to do a get set, or what do people use it for, right? Or how do you use it? I was very, very frustrated. It took me a long, long time to actually get it, what Redis is about. And I totally blame my SQL-ish background. I was so like biased toward traditional views, and given my experience, that it took me a long time to dumb it up and come up with Redis. And once I did it, it made perfect sense. I think the simplicity that, like, Redis, besides all its advantages, technical advantages, I think the fact that it's so simple both to get up and running with, like with the defaults, and this is something that we're very, very proud of and try to maintain, the fact that you can just get it and start running it, and it gets up in less than a second, and regardless the size, and it just starts working out of the box, is amazing. And on that, the simplicity is a design principle in Redis. So it's not just the first out of the box experience, it's also the kind of interaction that it offers and the visibility into what you're doing that is kind of unique. I think this gives it a lot of love from developers who appreciate this simplicity, this transparency, both the fact that the open source is open and they can look at it. They're not afraid of putting it as a dependency and just knowing that it works. Of course, the fact that its history speaks for itself, Redis's history, its stability and performance is also a very good comforting piece of knowledge for developers. Granted, Redis is mostly known as a cache. That's partly because it was sort of a memcache replacement. I'm not sure it's a total replacement for memcache. The opinions are usually, if you're looking for simple caching, just caching, be it a blob or something, take memcached. But if you want anything more, just you can use Redis. Like, you don't have to use Redis for that, but if you want more, you can use Redis or need to use Redis. So I don't have numbers. I'd say a lot of Redis deployments nowadays are just stupid caches even. They just do get and set the values. But once you cut this, or once you take this use case and put it aside, there are a lot of interesting use cases. And you did the search. I did my searches. Like, I can look up for the link, but there's this kind of website that lists all message brokers, queue managers, and stuff like that, all technologies. And besides appearing them as Redis, because it can do PubSub, it can do lists, it can do for queues, and now it can do streams, Redis is also there because I think half of the tools use Redis in order to implement their logic, like all sorts of things like Celery and Sidekick for different languages, like queue managers. So it's not surprising to see Redis so widely used, because it really offers, and it always has, and hopefully always will, continue to offer the basic building blocks, or the basic data structures, if you will, to build applications, not just any old application, but basically distributed, scalable, high-performance applications. Redis is a mandatory infrastructure for this type of application. I'd say the fact that it's very generic and gives you this analogy of Lego blocks or building blocks that we use sometimes, gives you the building blocks to implement easily distributed logic. Now let's talk about modules. Modules is a big thing. It's a big thing because there are so much to it. We, Redis Labs, and personally I, or myself, or me, I don't know, one of us, were the proponents or instigators for modules in Redis. We really, when Salvatore joined us, one of the first things we did was to sit down with him. We actually brought him to the home office in Tel Aviv, where all of us developers were sitting. And one of the biggest things we talked about was modules, which isn't like a new idea. It's, if you look at modules in Redis, you can see that in the first version of Redis, where Salvatore sent the email about announcing version one, at the bottom he said, and in the future I would like to see modules in it and all sorts of things. So like 5 or 6 years later, it actually came to fruition. The thing about modules that one needs to understand is why modules are needed. There's this lovely project which I think I've mentioned. It's called Redis. It's an open source project. It used to be led only by Salvatore. By the way, there was a transition in the governance of the project we may want to touch upon later. But basically, Salvatore was the dictator, or the benevolent dictator there. And if I had a contribution to Redis that isn't a typo fix and isn't a bug fix even, but maybe a new feature or a sub feature that I thought people would really need, and I definitely needed for my application, I had, I think, three choices. I could go to Redis's repository and make a pull request, and the likelihood of that being accepted was almost zero, because there are a lot of pull requests, not all of them get reviewed or got reviewed, and not all of them get accepted. I could perhaps try and code it using Lua in Redis or in my client, which is a sucky solution sometimes. And the last option I had to have my little feature in Redis is to actually fork Redis and start maintaining my own fork, backporting with every release, porting my feature to it and so forth. All options were very bad. Now, when you discuss a small feature like a new command, or not even a new command, but a variant on a command that filters something or does something better or adds something, you could argue that you could still do it in Lua or in the client. When it comes to much bigger things, it's very hard to do it client-side and with Lua. For example, not that there's a module for that, but I can give an example. In Redis, I don't remember the version, sorry, my memory is failing, but in one version of Redis, Salvatore introduced what's called as geospatial indices, which is basically a way to store geohashes in Redis and query them. I wanted to explore the idea of using geohashes for other stuff, not just the functionality that Redis offered, and tried to create a sort of a Lua library that extends Redis with more commands, like maybe a polygon search which is a very complex example, but other examples are simpler. The problem with that was that it was very hard to develop, but apart from that, it wasn't performant. So here you have Redis, an in-memory, kick-ass, blazing fast database, and anything you want to add to it becomes a very slow experience, which is bad. So we wanted, or I think this was a request from the community, largely represented by Redis Labs, but also from other people, to have a way to extend Redis, still maintain the same benefits of stability and performance, without having to clone Redis. And there were a few technical hurdles to go over. The biggest hurdle from Salvatore's perspective was, there were two hurdles, actually. One, which we haven't solved, is stability. Basically, a module is user land code, so anything goes. We can't assure the stability of Redis when someone is using a module, so you have to use modules from a well-known source, not just any old module. The other problem was, and which Salvatore solved quite brilliantly, was he wanted to have compatibility between different versions of modules and different versions of Redis. So if I have a module that was developed for Redis 5, and now there's Redis 6, I can upgrade my Redis 6, and the module not only continue running, but I could basically use the same binary. So I'm talking about binary compatibility as well. But once that got like designed and solved, we got the first version of module's API and started working with it. I was one of the beta testers, and I developed a few modules in my time. So it was a really great experience. It was like a rush of joy. Suddenly the sky were the limit. You could add anything with the module to Redis. I think 3 or 4 years later, when you look at it today, I see what happened with modules. I think modules are all in all a good approach. Redis Labs, we in Redis Labs identified a few interesting directions that we want to take Redis to. That is, take Redis in the sense Redis is an engine, Redis is a server. It gives us a lot of infrastructures in terms of scaling, persistence, high availability. We even have clients in every perceivable language. And we're exploring the possibilities of leveraging all that plus the performance in other data processing segments. So we have Redis Search for doing text search and indexing. We have Redis Graph for graph databases, which, by the way, uses a very nice, slightly new technology of sparse matrices, and I don't remember what all the technical details, but it's faster. And we're also doing the same with AI now and time series, basically trying to marry the Redis benefits with best of breed approaches to tackling problems in data processing nowadays. So all in all, I think modules are a great approach. I don't see these modules becoming a part of Redis itself. It doesn't make sense. Redis itself, the core needs to be a core, generic. It may include modules in the future, the core, but modules that are generic enough. And I hope to see more modules coming. The real problem of the module development is that the barrier is a little high to enter there.
Interesting perspective, Tamar, especially the recent developments there. You just touched on a very important subject. Over the summer, there was a lot of news, as in headlines, with the change of the governance in the project because Salvatore stepped down. maybe you want to kind of elaborate a little bit on this one, and especially kind of the new governance structure in contrast to Salvatore being essentially the owner, the benevolent dictator for life, and now the kind of team approach that is in place.
Certainly. So it wasn't a real surprise for anyone who was monitoring the project or following even Salvatore. Like, I remember from a long time ago that he said, I want to do Redis for 10 years or something like that. Like, when he talked about projects, he said there are little projects which I go through, which I finish after a week or a month. But Redis is the kind of project I want to spend a lot of time with, like in a 10 years time frame. And he certainly did that. But the project, and I think I touched it, has gone through several stages. It was created, it got popular over time, more people joined, more users requests, and eventually, I wouldn't say plateaued, but it came to a point where a lot of work is needed in just maintaining it and improving the existing, besides creating new features, which is what Andres and I think every developer in the world really likes. We all like to develop new shit. We don't like to maintain it. At least that's my view as a semi-developer. So I think at the end of the day, and after such a long time, Salvatore just needed to breathe. He wanted the project to continue. He just wasn't able to both maintain it, develop it, and do everything around it. And we were preparing for that. After he joined the company, some of our developers got to work with him more closely and get more insight into his code base and the way he's thinking and designing. And it's only natural that when he decided it was time to step back, and he's still with Redis Labs and he's still involved in all that, but he's not doing day-to-day coding or answering GitHub issues. He basically appointed two of the top brilliant people in the world, and certainly in Redis Labs, to take over the project in the sense of lead it. Now, the fact that he gave it to two people, that is Yossi Gottlieb and Oran Agra, two amazing developers, basically changed the rules of the game. It's no longer just one. With all the pressure of being the sole dictator, there are benefits to being a dictator. Like, you say something, and whether you're right or wrong, this is what happens. But the minute it got split between two, it's either one or more. It's not two. And it's a good approach because the project is currently at the scope where it's big enough to fit into a couple of people's brains. We need experts in different domains. We need there's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of tasks. So it's more than just one person, and it's still just open source, right? We're actually monetizing off it. It's basically put out there and will be continued to put out there for the good of everyone, I hope, to use and grab freely. We're not changing the license, despite whatever you've heard. It's always going to be free, BSD3. So basically, once we've changed the governance from a single person to multiple, the next logical step was to expand this and leverage on the existing community that we know Redis has. So the governance that we shaped is now made out of a governing body to which we've invited two notable and contributors to Redis. One of them is from Amazon Web Services, Madeline Olson, and the other is Zhao Zhao from Alibaba. Both of them have been loitering and bugging us and talking with us in the repository, making good code contributions, good reviews, good points, and really understand their Redis. They know their Redis. So these guys, girl and guy, are also part of the governance. I also got invited, by the way, not as a developer, I'm not the non-technical member. And right now we have this body of five people who share the load of maintaining and taking care of the Redis project. It may seem like a huge jump from one person in charge of the project to five, but in reality, it's a big challenge because Salvatore wrote the entire thing almost, or 90% or 95% of the thing, so he was aware of what he did. It's more like revealing what happened or studying areas in the code base that we don't really know. He had the entire code base basically in his head, whereas we have to go back and study it. But there's also a lot of backlog, if you will, in the project, things that we feel have been neglected and we'd like to clean the table. We want to be, one of the goals of our governing body is to be more open and more accepting, not in the sense that he wasn't, but we want to encourage people to contribute to Redis. We don't see ourselves as the sole developers of Redis. Quite on the contrary, I think everyone in the governing board would like just to be in the position where they can do code reviews, or even not that, have people who do code reviews and just like navigate. The idea of the core governing body is to set the direction and see how Redis should go. It's not necessarily implemented. And we think that the only way to scale the development of Redis and the open source project, of course, is have more able developers join the effort, any kind of developer in any aspect, whether it's the docs, whether it's the tooling, whether it's testing, whether it's you name it. We can't cover everything. We know each one of us is just one person and we're only five at best, and none of us is maintaining Redis open source as his day job. All of us have other jobs, right? So we definitely want to encourage more participation. And this is, I think, the biggest challenge for Redis now. How do we find, attract, nourish, help people who want to help and are interested in contributing to the project? We started that basically. We've established a milestone in the Redis repository. It's called the 6.2 milestone. We want to release the next version of Redis 6.2 by the end of this year or early in the beginning of next year. We see that version as a version that's less about new features, but and more about, like we call it, gap completion or API completion, or just making sure that a lot of often requested things that were requested in the past get into 6.2. So new commands, we don't want to break, we use semantical versioning now, so we can't just roll out a patch with new commands. We need a minor version at least. So we are planning to release the next minor version, that is 6.2. Which will include a bunch of new commands, basically as much as we can shove there, that we can, if we can get the time to implement them, plus a few optimizations and stuff that are too risky to do in the patch. But the milestone as is, I hope most of the things will get into Redis 6.2, but it's depending on assistance from the community. Even if all of us could work on it, I'm not sure we'll get to the bottom of the pile of features and stuff we need to do there. So this is the next test or the next challenge for us, I think, as a governing body of Redis, see how we can make the project development stickier and more compelling to people to just join and start helping, pick a feature or pick an issue and start coding with our guidance, of course, but we want people to be independent and we're looking for help.
Okay, I understand. So it sounds like Salvatore did the bulk of the work in the past, and since the transition, how have you seen, I guess, new contributors taking on that as you are kind of looking for to contribute to this? Have you seen, how would you describe that uptake so far? I understand you're looking for more, but...
All in all, I think we're doing really well, or maybe you need to edit that out because I don't want people to think we're doing too well. it's a gradual process, right? It takes time to bootstrap that. It takes time to get into the rhythm. It takes time to get the message out. It's not an instant powder that you can mix in a cup of water and just drink it. That said, I think it's going great, both because the core team is really stepping up for it. Oran is doing an amazing job. He's super responsive, and that's, I think, one of the critical things you have to have. You need to be responsive. So he's covering the repo from one side to the other. He's responding to new issues. He's also going through older issues and giving them love and care. We're also doing that, but he's doing it very, very, he's very focused on that now. And I see the return on the investment immediately, because even people who almost lost hope because their PR is collecting dust and rotting for years, just having someone go there to their PR, give a nudge, maybe give a few pointers, and showing the willingness does a lot of good. That said, we also started a new team, or I don't know how to call it, but another team called Redis Contributors, not just the core developers, but Redis Contributors. These are developers who we think are promising and are interested. So they have more privileges in the repo. They can do triage for issues. We sometimes ask them to do specific tasks if we have, or they can pick specific tasks. So we have two developers in the repo in this group now, and they're helping us a lot. So again, these are all exponential. Like, how do you measure a growth from 0 to 1, or from 0 to 2, or 1 to 5? These are like scales, but it's still baby steps, and we're doing it very, very, we're taking it slow on purpose. We don't just want to open everything and start everything. We want to see how it works and make sure that we can support that. That said, we want to continue. We need to increase the volume and the velocity, because at the end, it's a win-win situation. The more people who contribute, the more everyone benefits.
That has been more than interesting, Tamar. Given the fact that we are almost kind of on top of the hour, I think the final question would be from me. Where do you see the future of the project going forward now with the new governance structure in place and the road ahead?
It's a great question. So, yeah, we actually did some preliminary work to identify, explore, brainstorm on where could we go next. The good news is there are a lot of directions we could go. There are, without naming them, features and capabilities that we heard, we think people will enjoy using in Redis, whether they are based on streams. One of the tasks, for example, one of the things I'd like to see in the future is what we dubbed as Streams version 2. Streams is a great data structure, by the way, introduced like a couple of years ago. We already see people using it, but we feel that it could be even more awesome. So Streams version 2, which will offer some convenience tools, sure, but also a better way to consume streams, especially in large deployments. That's one way, or one direction I'd like to see Redis going. Basically, some of the streams need some, I think, love and care to make it, to take it to the next level. But there are also like totally orthogonal features which are not necessarily streams related, whether it's a new data structure that could be added to Redis, stuff like one of the most requested features in Redis is the ability to expire elements inside a hash or any nested data type for that matter. So we're examining that or seeing if we can give something that will solve this problem and others, maybe perhaps even add, dare I say it, a schema to Redis, which is, as all NoSQL databases are, a schemaless database. So maybe we need a schema in Redis. Oh yeah, totally. And that's just like the least tricky. There are lots of talks, there are lots of ideas, each with its own merits, its own challenges, but and we're still evaluating them, right? We're trying to listen to everyone, both Redis Labs customers, AWS customers, Alibaba customers. We now have like a very broad view of Redis users in that sense. But it basically, we have a lot of ideas, and I could go on and on listing them and getting wild. I can even say distributed transactions. But all of these ideas, whether good or bad, are definitely major tasks. And which brings me back to my previous points. I don't think anything substantial is going to happen without A, the governing body setting the direction, that is, establishing a roadmap or a wish list of sorts. This is what we want, and this is basically what we're doing with the milestone, and we're planning to make it even more visible and explain what we want. And on the other hand, other people helping the project to do it, because the fact that I say that I want feature X does not mean that I can do it or that I have the time to do it. And this is open source. I can say until tomorrow I want it, but until someone does it, it won't happen. So it all boils down to the community aspect here.
Yeah, that's a good one. I haven't picked up on the requirement to expire parts of hashes before. That's not something that I've had anybody ask for myself, but yeah, that's absolutely a good one. And
I can't understand, maybe you can explain it to me. Like, I know that the feature exists, and I can guess why some people would want to make this feature or want to have this feature, especially given that Redis can expire keys but not nested elements. But I can't, for the life of me, I find it very hard to find the right use case or use cases for that. That is, expire certain fields in a hash. Why not expire the entire hash?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would agree with them.
It's a tricky one. Like, if there was a good use case, a compelling use case, it would be much easier to push this forward. But it's a tricky thing to implement. It's a trade-off, right? So you either pay in performance and accuracy or memory or both. But in order to make that sacrifice, I need a good excuse, and just can't find it. So this is kind of on our wish lists. Other things are granted much more urgent and important, I guess, but still require a significant effort.
Yeah, no, I like the fact that you're expanding on streams as well. That's one of my favorite data types, definitely in Redis. Yeah, but that's something on the list as well. It's not that you have set your goals, as in for Redis 7, we want to achieve X, Y, and Z as such. It's more of a evaluation process at them.
So we currently put it on a sort of, we call it the 6.0, 6.2 and next year wish list, which is kind of leading to Redis 7. Streams version 2 is on that list, which is semi-public and soon will be very public. For streams specifically, it requires a big effort because there are a few missing commands, if you will, like people asked for a command that does this or that, and a few missing ideas, but we feel that we need someone or somebody's need to take like a few minutes to sit and see the entire picture, not just go and sporadically add a command that will be out of sync of the entire effort. Like, so in that sense, it's a bigger effort than just like adding a simple command to, I don't know, to a hget set, for example. I think one of the things we're missing is our users, our community, both in help, but also in inputs. I'd love to have like people who are using streams feel very comfortable to come somewhere to the developers, because before that, everyone who knew Redis or was interested in Redis's development knew who Salvatore was. So they'd grab him on Twitter or maybe meet him in a conference when, you know, you remember when the times we had conferences, right? You'd hang out.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Nowadays, so nowadays we don't have Salvatore to collect the feedbacks. We don't have conferences, at least now. And even if we had, I don't see us going to conferences. Like, the developers are more interested in developing, not going to conferences. So I think another thing is collecting feedbacks, not just from the repository, from people opening an issue. Just like, how do you use it? What else do you want from it? What would make your life easier, sort of thing. But maybe listening to this podcast will help people to come forward.
Okay, this brings us pretty much to the end of this episode. And Itamar, that has been more than interesting, especially the historic bits, the future bits, so to speak. And it has put certainly for me a different perspective on one of the most popular NoSQL projects, I suppose. Any parting thoughts, Itamar, before we round this off?
I just want to wish everyone here, Martin, Chris, and our listeners, live long and prosper.
Indeed. Excellent. And with that, welcome, farewell. Itamar, we would like
You should see my hand.
We don't have video. Itamar, thank you very much for all of your insights and for a great show. Martin?
Yeah, nice one. Very, very good to talk to you. One of my favorite subjects. So, yeah, this is a pleasure.
And looking forward to having you on the show once again in the future. Okay, that was a very interesting interview, Martin, don't you think?
It was. He's certainly a good speaker, isn't he? But then you'll find him talking at many Redis conferences as well.
That's true. By the way, full disclosure, we both used to work with Itamar at Redis Labs before Martin
What happened? Did you leave?
Yeah, no. Martin decided to defect to another company this year, and he's now looking after some GPU database swindle or something like this. I don't know. Anyway, funny enough, of course, Redis Labs is also the company where Martin and myself met. You could actually push it that far and say that actually Redis Labs is, unknown to many, the breeding ground for something called Linux in Laws.
Redis Labs plus a certain amount of beer, perhaps.
Yes, in a Prague establishment that shall go unnamed for the time being.
Good plan.
Okay, onto the Poxes, Martin. What do you have this week?
Poxes. I have had zero time. I have some anti-Poxes, which is, well, I have one anti-Pox, which is Windows.
Let's get into this during the next episode, which is about 2 hours long. The merit of Windows.
Anyway, and others. If you want to run anything on Windows, just create a Linux container and do it like that. You'll save yourself a lot of time.
Yeah. You could also, of course, use something called WSL 2.0 if you're
running on Windows. It's not,
yes.
Yeah.
Is it not? Okay, great. Maybe the topic for another episode. My Pox of the Week is a book called On the Broad. It's a satire, whatever you want to call it, a parody of the original Jack Kerouac Kerouac, sorry, Kerouac book, On the Road, and it's just absolutely recommendable in terms of where Kerouac originally is way too serious. This book written by, let me double check, Mike Lecher, yes, Mike Lecher. You, of course, you'll find the link in the show notes. Basically, seriously takes the piss at On the Road. It's essentially the original story set in modern times. Not a gang of people coming back from the war, but rather on the road between university gigs. If you're in for a laugh, if you're into a good parody, don't miss this book. That's okay. My box of the week. Of the week.
Very good. Very good.
And now onto your anti-pox, which is of course Windows, but we already talked about this.
Yes. Do we want to talk about some more? Or?
I think it has been said enough about Windows.
And I think so. Yes.
Operating systems.
Just don't try and run any anything on there that's not originated from Windows.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, I've tried WSI before, but that was still with version 1. Version 2.0 hasn't improved, because what they apparently did is they put a full-blown kernel into Windows rather than this emulation layer.
Well, if you're going to run Windows and you need Ubuntu or any other Linux distro, just do a dual boot. That would be my recommendation. what is the point of this WSL? I've tried it a bit, and it's just messy, clunky, and pointless.
Okay, my anti-pox would. Do I have an anti-pox this week? I reckon it's still. Well, actually, last week it was Biden. Sorry, last episode it was Biden. Let's make it Trump this episode, because he's still hanging on. We're recording this epilogue on what is it now? The 19th. Thank you, Martin. So Trump is still hanging on, or clinging on to what probably is lost hope at this very point in time, I suppose. Trump, if you're listening to this, get alive, get out of the White House. That would be my recommendation.
Yeah.
And with that, of course, we have to tease, Martin. We have to tease the next episode.
20?
That is the famous Christmas/New Year episode, which is funny enough, season 1, episode 20, will be a Christmas/New Year special.
Indeed.
Where we will talk about things past, things present, and things future. So if you're interested in the future, for those few listeners who are, please make sure to check this out. And make sure
that you have 8 hours spare time.
That's short. I thought we were targeting more like 20 hours or something. Maybe we can split this up into, like we did with the B-sides,
a
main episode, and then, of course, the extended rerun going for more like a day or two. Okay, and of course, another teaser, there will be a special episode of The Dark Side, as in tech support. Say no more, because we're still working on the details somewhat, so stay tuned.
There's a feature Father Christmas by any chance.
Well, I cannot reveal too much, so just stay tuned. This episode is targeted for 31st of December. It will be, of course, on HPR, like all our shows are, apart from the B-sides. So stay tuned and looking forward to another Christmas. No, not another Christmas special. Looking forward to this special Christmas episode. And of course, you, dear listeners, see you then and there. This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Solid Market, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by The Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo. a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.